Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. This week I'm going to be talking a little bit about the Russian Civil War. If you noticed in the last few podcasts, tried to kind of bring the Russia side of things up to date a little bit. There are a few gaps, a few holes, and moving on to the Russian Civil War is the next logical step. The Russian Civil War is a very complicated and confusing thing to study because it is not really a standard civil war, i.e. in that there are two sides vying with clear ideological positions for the future of a nation. It is that, but combined with the intervention of allied powers from overseas, and also the breakdown of the state in which the two sides are fighting over. So you also have nationalist breakaway movements and the collapse of the empire, the loss of places like Finland and Poland, and the attempt of places like Ukraine for autonomy. So in many ways, the political goals of the Reds and the Whites are also deeply intertwined with these other more local disputes and ambitions that are going on. So firstly, a word about the White Forces. The White Forces are a mixture of various different factions. On the one side, you have a number of old Tsarist generals who probably wouldn't have put the Tsar back in a position of power. Probably, had they won, some manner of military dictatorship would have emerged. You have figures like Denikin, Wrangel, Kolchak, and Kornilov, all of whom don't so much have a clear ideological position as to what they see Russia as. They are purely reactionary, and this is part of their downfall. They have no real program other than to destroy the Bolsheviks. The officers who join them are men whose lives have been devastated by the Bolsheviks, whose lands have been sequestered, whose families have been executed, whose wealth has been lost. And there was a popular feeling amongst the young officers of the White Army that really the old Russia was dead anyway. The Russia that they had known had been killed by the revolution. And there was a rather bleak kind of fatalism amongst many of them. They may win this war, but everything that they had fought for, that they had fought for, was lost anyway. And there was therefore a certain sort of angry violence to them, in that they did not, as their generals, did not really stand for very much other than the bloody revenge and the destruction of their enemies. And the ordinary Russians, particularly the peasants, are looking to the White Forces really to present them any kind of credible alternative to the Bolsheviks. The Bolsheviks, they know, or strongly suspect, will not honour their promises to give them land or allow them to keep the land. And as war communism kicks in, and if you're not sure about war communism, go back a couple of podcasts and look at the podcast that I recorded on the Red Terror. I think it's, in fact, the last one before this, And that should give you a background on that. But suffice to say, policy of war communism is catastrophic for the peasants. And there would have been an ideal opportunity amongst the White Armies, really, to rally peasant Russia against the Bolsheviks. But unfortunately, the White Armies offer no programme. They offer no propaganda. They have no policy to the peasants other than business as usual, oppression and the rule of the aristocrats and the landowners, which is hardly an alternative. The white officers tended to treat the peasant soldiers who fought for them with even greater sort of dislike, disdain and disregard after the revolution than before it. And these kinds of things really translated into the pendulum of support shifting towards the Bolsheviks as the lesser of two evils. Britain, France and America and Japan, though Japan's a slightly different case. Japan is really, when she invades in the East, is serving her own goals and is less interested in actually supporting a new white government than annexing a large chunk of land in the East. Anyway, suffice to say, Britain, France and America in the West all help in various ways to keep the white cause going. War loans, the landing of troops. America lands 12,000 troops, and as do the British and French in roughly equivalent numbers. And the equipping of white armies with latest in military hardware and uniforms. This keeps the white armies going, but very quickly, in Britain and France and America, major misgivings are aired about the efficacy of supporting the whites. Not only do the whites, as we say, have no policy, they have nothing to appeal to the bulk of the Russian population with, and those are the people who you're really, really going to win the war with. The armies are clearly riven with corruption and incompetence. Lenin, I don't know whether it's an apocryphal tale, but it is apparently true. Lenin supposedly wrote to the British government a sarcastic note thanking them for all their equipment. And what had happened is the white officers had sold uniforms, boots and rifles on the black market that had been delivered by the Royal Navy. And the net effect of that was, of course, that the Red Army avidly bought them or confiscated them or what have you. So the partners that Britain and America thought they had in Russia were seen to be as quite weak ones. And there was the age-old problem of the ego of generals. The white generals are unwilling to properly work together and coordinate their forces. And it's the, you know, as all major wars of the 20th century have shown, it's the coordination of armies that tends to win the day. The other problem that the white armies have is that part of their cohort is made up with Ukrainian Cossacks. There's another force from the south. There's an alliance between the Ukrainian Cossacks and the Social Revolutionary Party. Now, the Social Revolutionary Party were determined to undo the Bolsheviks, largely because they, if anybody, were the legitimate rulers of Russia after November 1917. After November 1917, there had been national elections to a nationwide constituent assembly, and that constituent assembly had been convened and then quickly shut down by the Bolsheviks. So the Bolsheviks had hoped that they would win the elections, but they are resoundingly trounced by the Social Revolutionary Party, who are far more moderate than the Bolsheviks, but also have spent many, many years developing their peasant base within Russia, and peasants make up the bulk of the population, therefore they cast the bulk of the votes. So the closing of the Constituent Assembly and the betrayal, really, of the Social Revolutionary Party leads the Social Revolutionaries into direct opposition to the Bolsheviks, And one of the things that the social revolutionaries had specialised in throughout their many years of opposition to the Tsar was terrorism. They knew about bomb-making, they knew about assassinations, and it had been them, not the Bolsheviks, throughout the 1860s to the 1900s, really, that had accounted for the majority of killings of Tsarist ministers and members of the regime. And the Bolsheviks, even with their new security apparatus of the Cheka, the Bolsheviks have a very, very weak grasp on the country and are the recipients of a number of bombings and assassinations and killings in the run-up to the Civil War. So the White Army is this, or the White Forces really, are this loose and uncooperative coalition with no ideological message. They are top-heavy. They have too many soldiers, too many generals, too many officers, and too few rank-and-file men. Very often you found in White Armies actual, you know, majors, colonels and captains doing frontline fighting. On the other hand, when you look at the Red Army, you actually have quite the opposite. You have too many Indians, not enough chiefs, so to speak. The Red Army begins from the remnants of the Tsarist forces that move over to the revolution, along with the Red Guards from various revolutionary cities. And there are kind of ragtag forces, really. One of the key units that the Reds rely on an awful lot are the Kronstadt sailors, the kind of hardiest and most battle-hardened forces that are loyal to the revolution. It's the figure of Leon Trotsky in the Red Army that is one of the pivotal causes of their victory. Trotsky, who, having read various biographies of him, doesn't seem to have done much other than thrown a punch in anger in his preceding years, adapts to the role of military leader extraordinarily well. You know, the man may well have his critics and his denouncers, but his ability to grasp the fundamentals of warfare very quickly without any kind of formal education in the subject is nothing short of remarkable, really. Trotsky's ego seems to have played a key part in all of this. He frequently would appear to men on bestride a white horse and, you know, at some instances even led men into battle. The extent to which he was really in harm's way, I'm not sure about, and that's perhaps doubtful. But certainly, he liked to...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Appear to lead by example. He was a great organiser. I mean, this is one of the reasons why he's entrusted by Lenin with the creation of a Red Army. His skill for organising and deploying forces was really quite second to none. The other thing that he is good at is blackmail. And one of the key areas where Trotsky knew he had an advantage is that he knew he had many experienced Tsarist generals in prison. And the option that was given to these Tsarist generals was that they were now generals in the Red Army, and if they did not perform the way Trotsky hoped they did, or if he suspected they were guilty of any kind of treason, Trotsky would execute their families. Trotsky was helped in one key regard, in that the territories that had fallen to the revolution were really Russia's heartland, the industrialised parts of Russia with a railway network. The enemies of the revolution existed kind of at the periphery in Siberia, in the Ukraine, towards the east, and the revolution was surrounded by its enemies, but these enemies occupied areas which were poor in industry, weak in agriculture, and that led to hungry, impoverished armies with low morale. Trotsky makes great use of the railway network across Russia and creates his own armoured train to take him from battlefront to battlefront. On board is a printing press, and when they stop at various destinations, will hand out a newspaper to soldiers, and Trotsky becomes a popular figure amongst them. The use of the Cheka detachments to motivate Russian Red Army soldiers into battle, again, is another key means of focusing the thoughts, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, lining up a Maxim machine gun and shooting down men who were too frightened or who turned back, was a quite traditional Bolshevik way of keeping men marching in the right direction. The intervention of the Allies actually does an awful lot for the Bolshevik cause. The Bolsheviks are able to kind of monopolise this idea that they are patriots, that Russia's being invaded. You know, it was the Germans last time, but it's the British and the French now, and in the minds of your commoner guard and Russian peasant at the time, there's scant little difference between the two. These are all just, you know, Germans, English, French, foreigners. And the Bolsheviks, if they're the party who aren't allied with these people and who are fighting for Russia, then this is seen as a positive. And the Bolsheviks are willing to wear any garb, any kind of costume, if you will, in order to draw that sense of to draw any kind of support to them. They know that hanging on to Russia is going to be extremely difficult, and so any strategy is worth giving a go. Emerging in the midst of all this chaos is a kind of localism which worries Lenin immensely. In places like Ukraine, you have what is loosely described as a green movement. Described as a movement itself is slightly misleading, as there is precious little organisation. But you have, in essence, local and regional groups emerging who neither want the Bolsheviks nor the whites anywhere near them. And every time an army turns up, of whatever colour, it tends to cause chaos and bloodshed. And these were referred to as the Greens. One of their leading figures is a fascinating character, well worth reading up on. Someone should make a movie about this guy at some point, a guy called Nestor Makhno, who was an anarchist who led a kind of guerrilla partisan war against both the whites and the reds to keep them at bay. And eventually fled the revolution and wound up sort of dying in Paris decades later. A brilliant intellectual and a warrior and a very charismatic figure. The Green Movement spelled a problem to Lenin vastly greater in many ways than the Whites did. The Whites were armies who could be surrounded and defeated on the open battlefield. The Greens represented the population. The Greens represented the possibility that the population might never submit to Bolshevik rule. And if the population didn't, that meant that the food supply would forever be in jeopardy. And this, again, gives us interesting clues as to why Lenin was so keen on measures like war communism. Suffice to say that the Green Movement is defeated, partly because it's not centrally organised like the Red Army is. But it takes an awful lot to do that. Trotsky also had the problem of the rather formidable Czech Legion in the middle of Russia. These were prisoners of war from the Austro-Hungarian Empire, often rather reluctant fighters on behalf of the Austro-Hungarians, who had, the Czechs had been part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire for a very long time. They had been captured by the Russians, and whilst on Russian soil, had been allowed to form themselves into the Czech Legion to fight against the Central Powers and, in the Czechs' view, for the independence of a new Czech state that they hoped would be, and was, in fact, created at the end of the war. However, with the revolution, all bets are kind of off. What you have now in the middle of the country is a force notionally allied really to the British and the French, to counter-revolutionary forces, which Trotsky insists should be disarmed. The Czechs rightfully are deeply suspicious of being disarmed by the Bolsheviks and suspect that probably what will happen is that when they are disarmed, they'll be executed as counter-revolutionary force. When the Red Army attempts to disarm them, the Czechs quickly defeat them and go on to fight a formidable campaign to control the Trans-Siberian Railway. Their goal was to exit Russia via Siberia, get to America, cross America, get back to Europe and get back in the fight against Germany and Austria-Hungary and do then defeat them and earn their place at the Paris Peace Conference. Most of them by 1920 get away. It helped that they had captured a leading White Army leader, Admiral Kolchak, and a large amount of Tsarist gold, which they were happy to hand over with the help of the Red Cross. They were evacuated, about 60,000-70,000 of them were evacuated to Vladivostok and managed to escape. It's one of those rare tales in modern history of where it's almost slightly cinematic, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. So ultimately, the Civil War isn't won necessarily by kind of the ingenuity and popularity of the Bolsheviks. It's won because the alternatives to the Bolsheviks are weak, unappealing, poorly organised and unable to create any kind of meaningful government. Now, the government that is created after the Civil War, Lenin's government is created during the Civil War, is really shaped by the Civil War. Sort of the sympathetic view of Lenin, I'm not sure I go along with this particularly, but the more sympathetic view of Lenin suggests that were it not for the Civil War, much of the authoritarianism of Bolshevik Russia would perhaps not have occurred, and there would have been perhaps far less violence towards kind of class enemies. Well, this kind of speculative stuff does none of us any good. We can make counterfactuals until the cows come home and none the wiser about anything. I think the point is that the Civil War very probably is a contributory factor in creating a sort of a brutalised generation of commissars. The Civil War accounts for something like about 14 million deaths in Russia, It's a staggering sum. Now, that figure, there are lower and higher estimates. There are some say it's 10, some say it's 20 million. These kinds of mass killing figures are notoriously ambiguous within modern history. But the point being that the state that emerges from the Civil War is massively weakened, is damaged by famine, has lost many of the generation of people who would have been able to help Russia get back on its feet in terms of its economy and administration and that kind of thing. And the infrastructure is, of course, deeply damaged. It's not just the countryside that's starved, it's the cities as well. And not so much through the actions of the whites, really, but through the actions of the Bolsheviks themselves. So at some point in the near future, I'm going to move on to look at the policies between 1921 and 24 that Lenin institutes to try to get Russia back on its feet and the legacy that those create for the future. I hope this has been useful for you. If you need anything else on this subject, if you go to my website, there's a downloadable ebook there on a student's guide to the Russian Revolution. That's got all you need on the Russian Civil War in it, in a kind of concise and easy way to get you through exams and that kind of thing. And you might also want to have a look at Chris Kostov's The Communist Century. Again, plenty of handy and useful and valuable stuff in there. Anyway, I hope this was interesting, and I'll catch you on the next podcast. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.